Interval 5. Undying. The warp now. There was a compartment within the hull spaces of the war barge Greenheart that none but the Primarch himself could unlock. The entire chamber was an isolated module, so that if need arose, Mortarion could have it completely ejected into space. In addition, there were a series of powerful graviton charges mounted in the framework, each one equipped with enough destructive potential to crush a Rhino personnel carrier into wreckage when triggered. These were the logical, practical safeguards he had put in place. Then there were the more esoteric precautions, the strange icons and psychogrammetric wards etched into the plasteel walls by laser beam, their shapes and forms copied from the pages of the demonology lore Mortarion had gathered in his quest to better know this unfathomable power. He entered Greenheart from the Terminus Est's landing bay, and made certain that the crew aboard the command shuttle knew not to disturb him. Sealing all hatches behind him, Mortarion made his way to the shadow compartment. His final order was to command the warriors of the Death Shroud to stand guard outside. He sensed their reluctance to obey, but did not comment on it. They would do as he told them. What would happen next was something the Primarch wished no others to witness. Removing one great gauntlet, he pressed his hand to a bio-reader and let it scan his genetic print. Dense phase iron locks on the heavy hatch opened once his identity had been affirmed, and he passed inside and then locked it. The prisoner was waiting where Mortarion had left it, held inside a great tank of reinforced armor glass, which itself was set behind a barrier of heavy electrocharged mesh. Robotic autoguns dithered at the cardinal points of the compartment, briefly scanning the Primarch to determine his identity before stepping back to track the prisoner. They moved where he moved, following the sluggish and fish-belly white creature as it shambled endlessly around the perimeter of the confinement. Mortarion smelled decay and fetor in the air, and he saw where the glass tank was soiled and discoloured. Toxic mucus stained the deck where the prisoner's bloated feet passed. The materials that comprised the compartment had been newly fabricated when assembled a few solar months earlier, but now they exhibited decades, if not centuries, of rot and ruin. Gargled the captive, pausing to make an exaggerated bow.
What great honor is this? My commander graces me with his presence.
Hands of pallid corpse flesh spread in a gesture of obedience across a grotesquely obese humanoid form, clad in scraps of corroded, distorted battle armor.
How may I serve you, Lord of Death?
Did you ever truly serve me, Life-Eater?
Mortarion did not address the creature by the name of the warrior it had once been. Ignatius Grulgor was the captain of the Death Guard's second great company. But that was before the betrayal at Istvan and the mass murder that had taken place as a world was consumed and sacrificed. The legionary that had been Grulgor died aboard the starship Eisenstein during that engagement. Or perhaps it was more accurate to say he had died there for the first time. What returned in his place was something else, a mutated and deathless flesh vessel for the power that writhed and bloomed in the fetid insanity of the Immaterium. It named itself the Eater of Lives, and after a fashion Mortarion had been able to snare the thing, holding it in his thrall while keeping its existence a secret from his legion. He looked upon the creature now, searching its bloated bulk for some aspect of the man it once was. Some of Grulgor was still there, he noted, in the arrogant swagger with which the beast held itself, and the snarling mockery of the words that drooled from its cankerous lips. The man I knew was always more interested in glory. Not service, Mortarion went on. and that earned him an irritable hiss from the creature. I do not imagine that has altered. The foul and corpulent form bowed its head, the single glistening horn in the middle of its brow catching the dull light of overhead lumens as it made an attempt to appear contrite.
So much about me has changed since then. Rebirth gives one a new perspective on a great many things.
It was bigger than a line legionary, closer to the mass of a dreadnought. Great clumps of doughy, reeking wattles hung in folds over leaking, pus-filled boils upon a body that supported a skull-like aspect. The eater's bloodshot, rheumy eyes fixed upon Mortarion as an unnaturally long tongue emerged to lick at the air.
"You need only ask," it went on,
and the creature took in a wheezing breath, pleasuring in the act.
"I am ready to be your weapon, Lord Mortarion. I feel the song of the warp out beyond these walls. It fills me, energizes me. Please let me kill for you. Let me feast."
"You want that, don't you? For me to let you free. To put myself in your debt."
He shook his head.
"No."
The Grulgor thing's bow deepened, a wounded tone entering its words.
"You own me. I do not deny it."
A crooked hand gestured at the corroding wards on the walls.
"I serve you now, just as I did when I was second captain. I am your loyal soldier."
It showed a mouth of broken blackened teeth in a cadaverous smile.
"If you did not want me to do so, then why am I here?"
It leaned close to the armor glass wall, foul breath misting the grimy partition.
"Why are you here now?"
"I am here because I have a choice to make," said Mortarion, the words welling up from somewhere deep within him. "And as much as I hate what you are, you may have insight I can use."
The Grulgor thing chuckled.
"I am so pleased I can help you at long last, my master. And fear not, for I already know the questions that gnaw at you."
It waved a fleshy limb at the air, disturbing the cloud of black flies that hummed around its head.
"The warp whispers to you in the moments of silence, doesn't it? In those quiet times, when you sequester yourself away to think, to ponder on events unfolding, or read from the books you think you should destroy."
Mortarion became very still. The Reaper of Men had spoken to no one of the troubling thoughts that plagued him during his meditations, and the dark semi-dreams that came upon him in his infrequent moments of reverie.
"You frame those whispers as something to hate and to fear."
The prisoner shook its head, ichor dripping from its jowls.
"No, my lord. They are the voices of opportunity, opening themselves up to you. They are the way to ultimate strength."
"What strength?" Mortarion shot back. "Even now my unstoppable warriors are falling to a sickness." He spat out the word, insulted to his core by the very idea. "The warp is a cancer."
"Yes," agreed the eater. "But that is its victory. The gift is the bloom of life out of death. It metastasizes from the old, bringing ceaseless undeath from the cage of poor, fallible flesh."
It took another wheezing breath.
"The living death cannot die. It is the ultimate, enduring forever. What does not live will never be killed."
"You speak in riddles."
Mortarion's hand fell to the hilt of the lantern.
Perhaps I should put your claim to the test. I could erase you with sunfire in a moment.
Do so,
said the prisoner, baring a wattled frog-like throat.
But in time, my corpse will gather anew, my essence undimmed. This is the grandfather's gift. We all will know it in due course.
Grandfather. It was not the first time Mortarion had heard that title invoked. It appeared again and again in the pages of the forbidden lore that he had been gathering. A power, he believed it to be, one entity among others that existed beyond the real, a thing that could never die. It would have been a lie to say that the Primarch was not intrigued by the possibility.
Endurance eternal,
said the Grulgor thing, as if it were reading his thoughts.
There is such greatness in it, the power to resist any enemy, to return against every foe again and again, until they are ashes and we are victorious. Is that not at the core of the Death Guard's character?
It paused.
It is not for all, of course. Many are too rigid in mind to see the possibilities. Too limited.
The creature showed its teeth once more.
And for those cowards, there will be a lingering end.
Unbidden, the Eater's words brought to mind a memory of another of Mortarion's most stalwart warriors, Battle Captain Nathaniel Garrow of the 7th Great Company. Once the noble Garrow had been a trusted warrior among the forces of the Reaper of Men, an unflinching weapon in his arsenal. But the Death Guard's journey to the War Master's side had seen the battle captain break faith with his liege lord and turn against his brothers. Mortarion had hate for Garrow. That much was certain. He felt the warrior's betrayal keenly, enough that he had taken it out on the remnants of the errant captain's company by chastising them for their commander's deeds. But that hate was marbled with regret as he studied the thing that had been Ignatius Grulgor. He imagined some alternate scheme of events, where it was Garrow who fought by his side towards Terror's Gates, and where these dalliances with the denizens of the Immaterium were unneeded.
"Look to the future,"
said the creature.
"Change always seems grotesque until you are changed. Ah, and you will be, my lord. You will be."
"Enough," Mortarion snarled. "You say you wish to serve me. Then give me your oath, demon. Pledge to obey my commands."
"And you will let me loose?"
The Grulgor thing was almost childlike in its eagerness.
"And you will let me loose?"
The Grulgor thing was almost childlike in its eagerness.
"I shall."
It bowed low, scraping its jaundiced face across the deck.
"I humbly give all my loyalty to the Death Guard. I always have. I always will. Before the Grandfather, I so swear."
A sickly resonance trembled in the air at the instant of the invocation, but then it was gone again. Mortarion grimaced and turned his back on the armour glass cell, walking towards the heavy hatch.
"Wait! Wait!"
the creature screamed at him.
"I have firmed the oath. Now let me out."
It banged its leprous fists on the barrier, making the deck tremble. The wards in the walls blazed blue-white, and the Eater hissed in pain as they forced it to shrink away.
"I will use you when I need you," said Mortarion, without looking back. "This has gone on too long. I have allowed myself to be led, and the inertia of old alliances and past deeds to direct events. No more."
He shook his head and reached for the locking mechanisms.
"Typhon will obey me. I will make him return us from this dread realm, or I will take his head."
As the hatch slid open, the demon that wore Grulgor's warped face exploded into vile, gurgling amusement.
"You won't,"
it brayed.
"Still, you cannot see, Lord Mortarion. Typhus is beyond your grasp. He has already accepted the mark."
Mortarion hesitated on the threshold and shot a look at the prisoner. "What did you call him?"
"Go ask for yourself, Deathlord,"
chuckled the fiend, settling down on its haunches to pick at the oozing scabs across its flesh. Mortarion let the hatch slam shut, and for a long moment he considered reaching for the ejection controls on the compartment's outer wall. But to cast this thing into the warp would not punish it, he noted. "Ready weapons," he told his death shroud. "It is time to call matters to account." As his bodyguards snapped into combat stances, Mortarion reached for the bioreader, placing his palm on it once more to lock the compartment. The heavy bolts slammed shut, and a spasm went through his fingers. The Primarch's eyes narrowed, and he turned over his hand to study the bare, pale flesh of his long digits. There, half hidden by a crease in his skin, were a cluster of tiny crimson welts in a perfect triangle, like the marks a biting insect would leave behind. The planet Barbaros, before. The convoy of troops and crawlers finally crested the low hill, and there before it were the outer walls of Safehold. Armsmen on the battlements saw the vehicles and the lines of soldiers as they made their approach and called out to spread the word. The Reaper of Men had returned from the southern campaign at long last. 8 solars ago, Safehold had not existed. Back then, the rough granite tor around which it was built had been the home to a bandit camp, a group of renegades who called themselves the Sullen. The Reaper had beaten their leader in single combat and convinced him to join the Overlord War, and part of the agreement was the ceding of the lands to Mortarion's rebellion. The city, the first truly free city on Barbaros, took root there, and now it was a symbol for all those who fought. Safehold was, as its name suggested, a place of refuge and defiance against the domination of the overlords. It was a place where humans could walk without fear, knowing that the high stone walls, the impregnable iron gates, and the guns of the warriors on the battlements would hold back any punitive raids. And truth be told, the vicious cullings of years past were growing rarer. The overlords still attacked the lessers, and they still played their cruel games, but the war was sapping their power. Slowly, inexorably, the tide was turning all across Barbaros. For the first time in living memory, there was hope, or something like it. The gates retracted into the walls as the first of the steam crawlers approached the city, and the armsmen found themselves joined up on the battlements by civilians eager to see the return of the Reaper of Men. They looked out in expectant silence as the grey-painted vehicles rumbled closer. Lines of battle-weary warriors walked alongside the machines, clad in dented metal armour of the same slate shade, their guns and cudgels hoisted over their shoulders. Faces, many sporting new scars, turned up to scan the battlements. They searched for loved ones and friends, those for whom they had gone to war. A hatch atop the lead crawler opened as the vehicle slowed, and a towering figure, gaunt and unsmiling, climbed out. Everyone saw him pull the common farmer's scythe from where he carried it over his back. He raised it high and shouted out a single word,
"Victory!"
Safehold erupted in shouts and cheers. They called out Mortarion's name as he leapt off the crawler and took the first steps through the gate. He nodded to all those who looked him in the eye, as if to affirm what until now they had only dared to dream. "We are winning." His troopers entered the city at his heels, and every one of them was greeted like the hero they were. For a moment, he almost allowed himself to bask in the energy of it. Mortarion could sense the shape of the emotion, that thing that others knew as joy, but as always it remained beyond his grasp. There was much to be grateful for, that was true, but he could only truly hold the form of darker sentiments in his heart. Mortarion saw those in the crowd looking for the warriors who would never be coming back, the brave sons and daughters of Barbarus who had spent their blood to liberate the settlements and valleys far away in the mist-wreathed southlands. He remembered Quell the Gunhand and her reavers, who had brought down the airship of the overlord Anvolian at the cost of their own lives, the great axe champion, Selos Morke, whose orphaned son still marched with Mortarion this day, and of course, Hessan Fane, the last of the Sullen. It was a pity the former bandit had perished beyond sight of his old hideout, but the Reaper of Men had ordered Fane's ashes brought back with the returning troops, so that they might be scattered here. Mortarion had no such attachment to places. He had long ago decided that when the day came, wherever he fell would be as good a grave as any. A woman in a scout's uniform pushed through the crowd towards him, and she offered a metal drinking canteen to the Reaper of Men.
"You look like you could use this," she said.
He accepted it with a grateful nod. As the cold, decontaminated water passed his lips, Mortarion studied the woman and caught on a barb of memory. Her eyes were familiar to him. She was 20 solas old, he estimated, hard in the face, but still a beauty.
"I know you," he offered.
"You saved my life once," said the woman. "Forgive me. A canteen of the pure is not much of a repayment for that, or all the other things you've done."
"It's enough." He placed her now. "A wagon fell in the fields outside Hela's Cut. That was you it trapped."
Off her nod, he went on.
"It's a long ride from there to Safehold."
"Yes, but I wanted to fight. And here is where the war is."
"The war is everywhere," he said, and made her hand her back the canteen.
"Keep it."
She shook her head and walked away.
"Things change so swiftly," said a voice from behind him.
And Mortarion waited to allow one of his lieutenants to catch up before moving on.
"You think so?"
"I know so. We're living proof."
Hunda Skorval was a hulk of a man, one of the heavyset breed from the Broken Moors, and a superlative close-quarters fighter. Amongst the elite of the Reaper of Men's army, he was granted the mark of the skull and sun to show his rank and standing. The sigil was tattooed upon the thick, pale muscle of his bicep. The glaring skull signified the shadow of death that both loomed over the soldiers and marched as their ally, while the six-pointed star was said to represent the light of the new dawn freedom would bring to Barbarus. Those so marked as Skorval was were Mortarion's death guard, his unbroken blades in the war against the overlords. Mortarion eyed Skorval's right arm. The limb ended just above the wrist, the stump hidden behind a greasy, blood-stained bandage. The injury was only a week old, a trophy from the closing stages of a fight against a dozen killbeasts. One of them had bitten off Skorval's hand and swallowed it, but the warrior had still managed to rip out the monster's throat and drown it in its own blood.
"What in the name of all that is cold?"
Another familiar figure came to them through the throng, his broad face switching from a manic grin to a worried frown and then back again.
"Hunda, did you leave something behind out there?"
"Oh, no jokes, Durrell,"
Skorval shot back, cradling his injured arm.
"I'm not in the mood."
"A kill beast tried to make a meal of him," Mortarion said levelly. "I believe he is so unpalatable that it choked to death."
"Now you mock me too."
Skorval's expression fell.
"Oh, I understand why it died," said the new arrival. "You have bitter blood, Hunda. I've always said so."
Mortarion clapped Skorval on the back.
"That's a good name for you. You'll have to keep it."
"Don't worry."
Durrell Rask, another of the Death Guard cohort, let his grin return.
"The alliance we secured with the Forged Tyrant Technomads is yielding a rich harvest. Their mech smiths can make you a new hand. Better than the old one, you'll see.
He turned to look up at Mortarion and continued. But to the question, is it true, Reaper?
I mean, we saw the fires on the horizon days back, but we could not be sure.
It is true. Mortarion gave a shallow nod. The struggle for the south is over, my friend. The settlements down there are free now. I personally staked out the last of Nakari's cohorts on the bare earth and let the lamprey worms feast on it.
Glorious,
whispered Rask.
And there is word from Sune and Murnau. Their missions in the Western Sink bring similar news.
Indeed.
Mortarion nodded to himself.
Good.
Good,
echoed Skorval, eyeing him.
Mark me, but you almost looked as if you might smile just then.
Mortarion's dour expression remained unchanged.
Impossible. I hear what the men say. They believe that if the Reaper of Men ever smiles, the sky will crack open and shatter. So you understand my grave responsibility, yes?
He paused, then glanced at Rask.
Have you had contact with Typhon's forces?
Months ago, his second-in-command and trusted friend had gone into the foothills to chase down a minor overlord, but no messengers had returned.
Our scouts report signs of his army to the east,
Rask said briskly. But he has made no attempt to signal us. Then the warrior changed tack and his grin grew wider.
That's a matter for another time. With your return and these victories, this is the tipping point. Today, here and now, the extinction of the overlords is inevitable.
Mortarion scowled.
We're not there yet, Darul. There are still more battles to be fought.
As he said the words, he pushed down the urge to turn and look away to the northern peaks, to where his foster father's dark citadel still stood, wreathed in the most toxic of mists and heavily protected, such that no Death Guard had ever been able to approach it.
And we have lost many along the way, he concluded.
Skorval gave a low grunt of agreement.
Aye, but there are none who would fault the cost. Not any more. All those who chose to obey the overlords rather than join us have seen the folly of their ways.
There had been humans, lessers in spirit as well as character, who thought their lives better served under the overlord yoke. Some were broken souls who could not comprehend of anything else, and their loss was to be expected. But others, the worst of them, were willing slaves, happy to trade in the lives of their own kind. The Death Guard gave them no mercy. If any were left, Mortarion imagined they had been subsumed into the fleshworks of the overlords by now, cut into new golem soldiers for their armies.
We're stronger than we've ever been, Rask was saying. You trained the Death Guard, Reaper. You made us invincible, and in turn the Death Guard have spread their warmaker skills to every human settlement. We're all fighters now. Every town is a fortress, every harvester a soldier.
I'll drink to that, said Skorval,
throwing a glance at the water canteen Mortarion still held.
Provided you have something stronger, of course.
Rask let out a bark of laughter and beckoned them towards a barracks house.
Hey, come with me. I have just the thing.
He led them to a room at the rear of the low, thatch-roofed building, and as they entered, the smells of fermented sugars and heavy yeast assailed Mortarion's sharp senses.
What have we here?
Rask walked over to a complex mechanism of rattling pipes, open flames and bubbling flasks.
The thing that most know about the Forged Tyrants is how good they are at making weapons. But they have another skill, one less obvious.
He turned a spigot on the contraption, and it emitted a measure of smoky fluid into a metal cup, which he handed to Mortarion.
They brew spirits like you won't believe.
He filled more cups, one for himself and one for Skorval, then raised his in salute.
A tribute, said the Death Guard, to this victory and the next.
Mortarion took down the drink and frowned at the taste. Skorval and Rask seemed to savour theirs, but to his strengthened constitution it seemed like weak tisane. At length he shook his head.
You give me mother's milk, Dorl. It has less kick than the water I drank a moment ago. Is this a libation suitable for our best warriors?
I thought it was smooth,
began Scorval. But Mortarion waved him to silence.
No,
said the Reaper of Men. He ran his long-fingered hands over the mechanical distilling rig, back along its length until he found a copper tank filled with unfiltered, still raw fluids.
This would be better.
Mortarion refilled the cups with that more powerful essence and made his own salute.
Now we drink.
Brask eyed the murky contents of his drinking vessel.
Reaper, this is half toxic. A man might be killed by a draught of it.
If we are not strong, we will not win, intoned Mortarion. If we cannot defy poison and darkness and pain, we cannot stand against death.
He stared into the depths of his own cup.
My bastard of a foster father taught me one valuable lesson that I have never forgotten. And it is this. Everything is a test. Life is a challenge that must be endured. Those who are not testing themselves every day are those who are already dying. So drink.
Against death,
said Scorval after a moment, and drank deep.
Against death,
repeated Rask, taking a breath before he did the same. Mortarion joined them, and he revelled in the rolling, fiery sting of the raw fluid as it coursed down his throat and spread across his chest. It made him feel alive, invigorated, as only battle could. Scorval and Rask both gasped in pain and took on hard colour as they struggled to follow his example. The bigger man crushed his cup in a moment of shock, while his comrade stood stock still. Finally, Rask let out a crack-throated howl of effort.
Blood and fire, I felt that!
He wiped a film of sweat from his brow.
Another measure, and I'd welcome a golem's knife in my belly.
Then it served its purpose, said Mortarion,
the crooked twist of an almost smile on his lips.
I promise you we'll share the cups again when the war is over.
Aye,
Scorval barked.
We will drink from Nakari's skull.
The hulking warrior let out a thunderous gale of laughter, but the sound was blotted out by something else. The keening wail of a war siren.
Attackers!
Spat Rask, wrenching a roto-barrel pistol from his belt holster.
Who dares strike here? They've picked the worst day for it.
Mortarion threw his empty cup aside and stormed back out into the daylight, just as the heavy thrumming of rotor blades filled the air, dragging behind a great black shadow that carved across the feeble glow of the sun. His scythe was already in his hands as he glared up at the airship, a twin to the one that Quell's warband had turned into fire at the climax of the Battle of the Thorn Garden. Gunners on the battlements were frantically cranking their weapons up and around to target the low-flying craft, which had emerged from the cloudy sky with little warning. Fast ropes fell from the black windows of open hatches along the bottom of the craft, and Mortarion tensed for the fight to come. The energy of pre-battle crackled through his nerves, and whatever fatigue he had felt from the long march back to Safehold was gone in the blink of an eye. But then figures were swarming down the ropes, figures in battered grey armour of familiar shape, and the fight he had half hoped for melted away. Death Guard warriors landed all around the square before the barracks houses, each of them unhooking and giving Mortarion the salute of a mailed fist against their chest.
Look, see,
said Rask, his momentum fading as he pointed towards the flank of the airship. Daubed on the side of the craft was the mark of skull and sun, covering the overlord runes that had previously identified its owner.
Ah, the cloud breaks.
The last armoured man to descend wore a battered helmet that sported a single horn protruding from the brow, and equine hair pennants hanging from his shoulder pauldrons. Detaching from the rope, Typhon twisted off his helm, and his bearded face split in a savage smile as he laid eyes on Mortarion.
I knew it would be you,
he said.
When my long sight spied the column returning to Safehold, I knew you were back.
You always do like to make an entrance,
Scorval said coldly, making no attempt to hide his scorn.
Count yourself lucky you were not burned out of the air.
Typhon's smile turned crooked and wry.
You don't like my prize?
He waved in the direction of the airship.
I packed it with every barrel of food, medicine and pure water I could loot from Volkral's storehouses. I'm sure it can be put to good use here.
We don't need the overlords to feed us any more, hissed Skorval.
But Mortarion cut him off before he could go on.
The people will take any bounty they can get,
he said firmly, shifting his scythe to plant it in the dirt. Mortarion's gaze raked over his second-in-command. No longer the skinny, waspish youth he had fought beside in the mists of the mountain pass, Typhon had grown into the cunning warrior he was always destined to be. He had proven himself a dozen times over during the first years of the war, enough that Mortarion had granted him his own Carder of Deathguard to lead.
It's good to see you, brother.
Typhon came forward and clasped Mortarion's wrist in the old manner of greeting, their vambraces clanking together.
It is,
Mortarion agreed, and found that he meant it. Some, Hunda Skorval among them, had never taken to Typhon, even with all his victories and wounds suffered in the name of the cause. Both Kallas and Mortarion were outsiders, different from their Barbaran brothers-in-arms in measures of physical form and origins. But while Mortarion's towering stature and lean aspect had come to be accepted as part of who he was, Typhon's whipcord nature had never truly been acknowledged by his peers. The true stories of Mortarion's origin were known to very few, and spoken of in half-myth by others. Typhon, on the other hand, was visibly a half-breed, and despite Mortarion's best efforts, his comrades still suffered from that prejudice. In the beginning, it had been the two of them who first rallied the Lessers to fight for their future. It had been their shared example that gave the people of Barbaros the impetus to take up arms against the overlords. But those days seemed long ago now, and the ease Mortarion felt at seeing his old friend again was darkened by a faint aura of doubt. Had something changed between them while they had been apart, fighting their separate battles? No. He refused to consider that, and crushed the misgiving before it could fully form.
You have defeated the overlord Volkrau's forces, then, said Rask.
More than defeated, Durrell, Typhon replied. Exterminated. There's not a black manse that still stands across the foothills from here to the horizon.
He glanced at Mortarion.
My men destroyed the great bridge across the Stonefall Rift as Volkrau desperately tried to summon support from Nakari. It didn't come. And you know what that means.
Mortarion considered that fact.
It means that the High Overlord abandoned one of his closest allies to be put to the sword. He chooses to consolidate his own defences rather than come to the aid of another.
Aye, that's my reading of it.
Typhon glanced up briefly as the airship drifted away towards the fields where it could make a soft landing.
Nakari goes to ground where he knows we cannot follow. He's nothing if not predictable.
Coward, snarled Skorval.
Hiding behind the tox clouds and playing with those dark magics. Afraid to show that blighted excuse for a face.
Typhon gave a weary nod.
True enough. We won, but every battle fought now is of the same stripe. They send the golems and the kill beasts, and sometimes Nakari's minor cousins will even walk the battlefield themselves. But they never stand and fight. Every time they try to draw us into the deep mists, to choke us with the poison of the high reaches. For all our victories, we're trapped, fighting a defensive conflict.
He looked back at Mortarion.
Now you've liberated the south, we have to consider anew how to reach our final triumph. Or else we'll soon reach a stalemate.
I imagine you have a suggestion, Mortarion said without weight.
I do.
Typhon's smile returned.
You will not like it.
But Mortarion was not about to let him voice it. Not yet. He held up a hand to silence Typhon.
You are not alone in these thoughts.
He looked to Rask.
Durrell,
I think it is time.
My lord?
Rask's eyes narrowed.
Are you sure? I mean, there's still so much that needs to be done.
His voice dropped to a conspiratorial whisper.
We're not ready.
I'll be the judge of that, he told the other warrior.
Mortarion shot Skorval a look.
Bitterblood, listen to me. Find the healer's hall and have them assess that wound of yours. We'll do as Rask said. Get you a machine hand that will punch twice as hard. Go.
Skorval muttered under his breath, but he saluted the order and wandered away. Mortarion turned back to Rask, seeing the intrigued expression spread over Typhon's face from the corner of his eye.
You'll take us to the works, Durrell. I want to see what you have been making while we were away.
Rask glanced at Typhon, then gave a salute of his own. Of course. It's this way. He walked on, and Typhon fell into step with Mortarion a few paces behind.
I suspected you had given some project to our Master of Ordnance before we left Safehold. But at the time I didn't press you on it, began the other Death Guard. Care to illuminate me?
I prefer to show rather than tell,
Mortarion replied, as they made their way towards the black granite tor on the edge of the settlement. Typhon smelled sulphur, acid, and the hot, rusty tang of burning metal. The odours assailed him as they passed through the narrow slot that gave entry to the interior of the tor, and he drank it in. Ashen on his tongue, it tasted like warfare, and he enjoyed the memories of battle that it stirred in him. So it was said, the Sullen had spent generations carving out the interior of the tor to create a safehold of their own, and there the Bandit clan had built a culture that could weather the predations of the overlords and the brutality of Barbarus's harsh winters. But their way of life was never going to last. Either Nakare or his minions would have eventually brought their most powerful magics to bear on obliterating this stone bastion, or the Sullen would have killed each other through internecine fighting. Fortunate for the Bandits, then, that fate had brought Mortarion to their gate. He claimed them all by trial of combat, and made the Sullen a part of the Death Guard. Their home inside the tor, though, that he had given to someone else. Rask led them deeper into the spiralling, high-ceilinged caverns that filled the tor's interior. Spaces that had once been set aside for Sullen clanner domiciles were now great workshops, where blacksmiths and metalworkers beat out sheets of salvaged battleplate into new shapes and built armaments from scraps and ingots of tooled iron. The tor belonged to the Forge Tyrants now, and they had made it their own. Here, the weapons of the Death Guard were made, the tools of the war constructed, repaired, and improved upon. Typhon's guns and blades were all cut by the tech nomads, tailored to his reach and his fighting style. It was a benefit of rank and status as one of Mortarion's elite. But as he walked on after Rask, he saw killing machines of new design and form that drew his attention. Mortarion nodded, noticing his interest.
The smiths have been hard at work. I granted their artisans first choice of the mineral stocks from the overlord mines we have captured, and all battlefield salvage rights. It is not just our blades they are keeping sharp, my friend.
I see that.
They passed workbenches, upon which lay weighty swords bristling with spiked guards, great lightning halberds fitted with electrochemical batteries, and dragon guns capable of projecting streams of ignited fuel and virulent acids. Typhon saw multi-barreled ballistic slug throwers fed by great ammunition hoppers, and rotary blades heavy with barbed chains and flail attachments. He feigned a look to appear impressed by it all, but inwardly he found little among the work of the Forge Tyrants to affect him.
Mortarion does so like his tools, Typhon thought to himself,
glancing at the war-beaten battle scythe the Death Guard commander carried over his shrouded shoulders. It was his way, Typhon reflected, to reach for something physical with which to oppose the threats around him. Mortarion was not at ease unless there was a weapon within a hand's reach.
Does he know that about himself?
The question passed through Typhon's mind, but without an answer it drifted away again. There were other kinds of weapons, of course, other kinds of tools. More and more, Typhon had allowed himself to consider these things, to look at factors that others would have decried out of hand, the numinous and the unreal, These things could be turned to the business of making war as easily as blade or bullet, if one only understood how to wield them. And if he could make Mortarion see those things as he was learning to see them, then perhaps the war with the overlords could be ended in weeks, days even.
In here.
Rask brought them to a smaller cavern, off one of the larger spaces, and there stood a pair of heavy-set warriors in full armour, each cradling a bell-mouthed shot cannon. They saw Mortarion and wordlessly stepped aside, drawing open a thick leather curtain, cordoning off the hollow in the rock.
More toys for us to marvel at?
Typhon slipped a little, allowing his disregard to show. He covered it quickly with a smirk.
You've been keeping the forge tyrants busy.
The chamber was dominated by a series of steel racks, each taller and broader than a man, each covered by a great oilcloth. Technomad smiths paused in their work at benches across the far wall, but Mortarion nodded to them and they went back to it. Yellow flares of sparks shot up from grinding wheels passing over armour plates, and there was the fizz and crackle of brazing torches. Mortarion halted in front of one of the shrouded racks.
They never stand and fight, he began, repeating Typhon's earlier words.
This is so. Our enemy hits us and fades away. The Death Guard can defend any settlement we place under our care. When we catch overlord convoys in the valleys, we butcher them. There is nowhere on Barbaros where the air is clear that they can walk unopposed.
But we can't kill them all,
added Typhon. He began to wonder where Mortarion was taking the conversation.
Anyone who follows them too deep into the haze dies there. Nakare and his animals don't need to lift a finger. Our human weakness ends us for them.
The last words sounded bitterer than he had intended them to. There must be another way, he wanted to say, the words forming on his lips.
There is another way.
Mortarion silenced him with his reply, and for a brief moment Typhon thought he heard a buzzing cadence in his ears. Rask reached up and pulled down the heavy cloth covering the nearest rack, to reveal beneath it a set of armour the like of which Typhon had never seen before. Over an undersuit made out of the tanned skin of lamprey worms, the battle plate sported lines of hawsers arranged in bunches like muscles, which in turn were protected by panels of steel daubed with the signature grey livery of the Death Guard. The device of the skull and sun was the only iconography upon it, visible on one shoulder pauldron.
"What do you think?" said Mortarion.
"This represents many months of effort from the best technomad artisans on the planet."
Typhon reached out, toying with the fingers of an empty gauntlet. The chainmail glove was more flexible than he'd expected, and lighter with it.
"Fine workmanship."
There was a beaked helmet hanging slack at the neck of the suit, and he examined it. A band of cast armour glass would cover the eyes of the wearer, and the sharp snout of the headgear seemed to be fitted with layers of dense filter material. Pipes spun out of resin-treated paper looped back to a container on the armour's back, nestled between the shoulder blades.
"There's an air bladder in there, and a pump that works off the action of the wearer's movements,"
Rask explained.
"With the helm affixed, it is completely sealed, and no toxins can affect the wearer."
He paused and licked his lips.
"Well, that's the idea, anyway."
"I assume you've tested the suits in the mist,"
said Typhon, still staring into the dead eyes of the mask.
"How far?"
Rask looked away.
"Not far enough," he admitted. "Some of the volunteers, they didn't survive. We had to drag them back down by their tethers."
"That was the last iteration," Mortarion insisted, moving to the largest of the racks. He uncovered the suit resting on it, and Typhon could tell by its dimensions that it had been tailor-made for the Reaper of Men.
"These versions have been improved. Rask's duties in Safehold were not only to defend it while we were at battle. He supervised the construction of this armour."
"I see."
Typhon considered his own battle plate in comparison. What would it be like to wear something like these new suits, something so enclosed and all-encompassing. He wondered if it would overwhelm him.
I admit I prefer to fight with more freedom available to me. Unless you can learn to breathe poison, you'll never fight Nakari,
Mortarion snapped, and Typhon stopped himself from rising to the bait.
This is what will end the war for us.
Mortarion gestured around.
In just a few years, we have built a savage fighting force out of a population of frightened, cowed lessers. We have the best weapons, thanks to our metalsmiths and gunmakers, but the point of the sword must be close to cut meat. This,
he placed his long-fingered hand on the breastplate of the battle plate,
this will get us close. Do you have enough of this armor to outfit an army?
Ventured Typhon, but he already knew the answer.
The equipment in this cavern was likely all they had, and Rask's silence confirmed the suspicion. I will take the best warriors we have, said Mortarion. You among them, my friend. An elite unit that will cast a shroud of death across the overlords. We'll end this in a single night of fire and slit throats.
He showed his teeth with those last words, lost in anticipation of the moment. Typhon's steady gaze bored into Rask, who would not return it.
Darrell does not want to admit his doubts, but I hear them as loudly as if he shouts.
He glanced at Mortarion.
This is a daring plan, Reaper, but it is a great risk. You rely on untested experimental technology in a pivotal battle against a foe that we know full well has powers beyond the material.
He stepped away from the armor racks.
I am your brother in battle, and I would be remiss if I did not speak truthfully to you. What you propose could lead to your death up there on the mountain, and that of all our best fighters. I am no stranger to risk.
Mortarion folded his arms across his chest.
I took a grave one on the day we first met. I know you recall that moment. That time has come again.
He shook his head.
What other option is there?
Typhon wanted to smile, but he hid it.
Perfect, he thought. He comes to the question without the need to lead him there. I have an alternative. I brought it back to Safehold aboard the airship. Something with more potential than a handful of armored suits.
What do you mean?
Said Rask.
I prefer to show rather than tell, he replied.
And this time, Typhon's smile was revealed in its feral totality.